Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live, and we are so thrilled to have Kathy Garver from Family Affair, the iconic show, but as well as many other voiceover and different movies that she's done. Here's that theme song that just takes me right back to how happy I felt watching her on that show when I was watching it with my grandmother as a kid. That gives me such a happy feeling. We'll be back in 20 seconds with Kathy Garver. So, and you can send in any questions to richardrossilive@gmail.com. So stay tuned, and we'll be back with Kathy. Her new book, Surviving Sissy, has just come out. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. Welcome, Kathy Garver.
Well, I'm delighted to be here, Rick, and talk with you again.
Oh, well, the last time we talked, the book was something we talked about in the future. We were very excited. It was coming out in September, and here we are. It's like the old farmers, when the fall hits, it gets real busy harvest time, and your books come out here in September, and you're busy. You got some signings coming up now in Barnes & Noble and here in California, right, in October.
That's right. The week of October 5th. The 5th, I'll be at the Barnes & Noble in Santa Monica on the Promenade, and then I'll be doing Larry Edmonds on the 7th in Hollywood, and then on the 8th, I will be at the Barnes & Noble in Burbank. I'd like to invite all your listeners to come out and see me. I'm going to be doing a reading from the book, and we'll have a little interview and Q&A, and of course, a signing.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, it'll be a pleasure to hear you read, because after your run in Family Affair, in addition to acting, you've done a lot of voiceover.
Yes, I've done about 60 audiobooks, and I actually teach how to narrate audiobooks up in San Francisco, and I've won like 5 Audis for it. The Audi is the Oscar for the spoken word. Actually, I also direct them. I directed Amy Tan, the wonderful author who wrote Saving Fish from Drowning, and she narrated her own book, and I directed it, and I let her know that we had been nominated for an Audi, but then we won. So I called her, and I said, Amy, isn't this great? We won the Audi. And she said, yeah, but when they first called, I thought that I'd won a car.
Well, congratulations on all of those, and you've brought in animated characters to life as well.
That's right. I'm actually going to a toy convention in Santa Rosa where I will have sell photos and of my character from Marvel that everybody loves, it seems, which is Firestar, and her co-person, Angelica Jones, who is much sweeter than Firestar.
Wow.
And we did that for Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends with the wonderful Frank Welker, the man of 1,000 voices, and Dan Gilvezan, who played Spider-Man.
Well, you know, you certainly have not only survived but thrived, you know, post-Sissy. I remember just while you were, you know, watching the show and thinking, that Sissy is so adorable and sweet to those kids. You know, I wish I had a sister like that, you know, looking after me and protecting me. And you got that role when you were, if I remember our last time we talked, you were in college at UCLA and kind of got this audition. And how did that all happen again? I kind of have some memory of you talking about it, but that's a really interesting how you went from college student to people recognizing you on the street.
Yes, and actually I talk about that in my book. It's in the prologue. I had been working as a child a lot, and had in This Is Alice, in a lot of the Westerns, Branded and Sheriff of Cochise. And then I went away to high school and came back to UCLA. I went to high school in San Bernardino. And so I came back to Hollywood, LA, started college, and then restarted my career. And I was doing shows like The Patty Duke Show and different shows like that. And so I got a call from my agent, Hazel McMillan, and they said, oh, they're looking for this girl, and it's all cast except for one person, which is the teenage girl, Sissy, and they want to see you right away, like in 3 hours, and they want this blonde, blue-eyed, blonde teenager. I said, well, that's great, Hazel, only I have dark hair, and I'm no longer a teenager. But my mom had the solution, so I called her up. She rushed up to the sorority house where I was staying, Pi Phi. She sprays my hair with this Streaks and Tip solution, which is a sticky substance that you put on your hair, and it's supposed to turn your hair a different color, hopefully blonde. So we went, my mom took me over to the audition, and I'm talking with the producer, writer, director, Ed Hartman, and we're chatting away, and he said, what's wrong with your hair? I said, my hair? And he said, yes, it's turning green. I said, oh, isn't that funny? Must be the light. Well, you know, kind of broke the ice when we started talking, but yes, that was how I first went on that audition and then did a screen test and then was cast into a role which became very iconic in the annals of culture.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, on the natural perspective, your hair turning green seems like it would, you know, sabotage. But it's encouraging that when you know, God has a plan for us that, you know, even the mistakes or the crazy things, you know, don't derail that. That, you know, a lot of actors that listen to our show, I think that's very encouraging because they get nervous running to an audition and think, oh, my God, I was in there with green hair. But you broke the ice with that, and he saw that, you know, thank God you were Sissy instead of a blonde with blue eyes, because you were Sissy. I can't imagine anybody else in the part.
Oh, well, thank you. And I think that that's true. So many times actors, and I did this too, everything has to be perfect. Oh, my hair has to be just right. I have to wear the right color. What if they see that one of my nails got messed up? And I found in a long time of working, ever since I was a child, that all those things, it isn't that important. What's important is you. And you being true to yourself, and you bringing your best self, and just talking. And that seems to be the very best way to approach an audience, and even in just in life, and people that you meet. To be that authentic, natural you is, I believe, what is attractive and is meaningful to other people.
Well, you certainly bring that, and you know, there's a feeling when talking to you that, you know, the sweetness, the goodness that was in the character is part of the type of person you are that comes through and that's helped you to survive Sissy. And if you're listening today, the book Surviving Sissy is available everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Larry Edmonds. Of course, at Kathy's website, you can get a lot of information, kathygarver.com. And the book is Surviving Sissy. Surviving, that's something I'd like to ask you about again, because without mentioning any names, some of the, you know, well-known young stars have called me and like the show and you know, they're having their meltdowns and different things they go through. How did you survive, you know, the avoid this fate of so many child stars, the tragedies and the suicides and the, you know, how did you stay grounded? And what would you say to, you know, a young actress or singer that's, you know, overwhelmed right now with the fame, the pressure, the whole pressures to do the sex, drugs, and rock and roll?
Just say no. Say no to the drugs and say no to the alcohol, especially if you have an addictive personality. Now, my mom would say, oh, if you go to a party, well, take a drink and you can have a sip and you don't have to drink the whole thing. And that was okay for me because I don't have an addictive personality. There is so much stress and anxiety and angst on the young people and even the older actors. It's just a very strange profession, but especially with all the social media and the Twitter, and if one step is taken wrong for especially the young actors, the tweeners or the teenagers or the young adults, they take it to heart. You know, oh, that sweater just looks awful with that blouse. Oh, my gosh, she has to be, you know, the worst dressed of the week. And the guys, oh, my God, doesn't he ever shave? Or, you know, just all kinds of biting, insulting things that go on. If you don't have a well-formed sense of self yet, which is especially prevalent as you were growing up, it can be very hurtful and can lead you to say, oh, I just want to numb myself from all of this. It's all these things that are, A, going on in the world, and all those bullets that are being, you know, slung at me of jealousy or whatever they are. If you have, I think, a strong foundation of family, that, of course, helps. You can still go to your mom and dad, you know, and they can still help you out. But actually, I just recorded this Max Lucado's Treasury of Bedtime Prayers. And in it is a compilation of quotes and some things from the Bible and some really nice mots to hear. And if you read to that, you read those to your child before they go to sleep, you know, there is a sense of security because somebody else bigger than you is looking out for you and you can always trust in that higher spirit. I still say prayers every night before bed, every night. And I make that communion with that higher spirit. So what I would tell the young actors, if you put your faith in something higher than yourself, then all these little things just kind of melt away because you know that there is something that's more beautiful and stronger that is guiding you. If you make a mistake, I mean, I lost parts. You know, I should have had that part. Why didn't I have that part? Was it something I did? And then you get to know it wasn't something that you did. They wanted somebody taller, shorter, fatter, thinner. It was somebody else's time to get that particular role. So there, you can keep going, and maybe that's a rationale, maybe not. But it makes you feel like, oh, okay, it's not just all about me. I am on the path that I should be on, and everything that happens is my path, my inner spirit that is leading me.
Wow, that is wonderful, because you can trust God, you can't trust your family. That seems to be a thing with, there was a young star that called me in the middle of a meltdown, like a breakdown that we're having. But one of the things that set it off was they trusted, and I won't mention the name, but they trusted a famous TV doctor. And then the doctor, for ratings, went on the show next week or whatever and told all their, even more, the gossip about this person. So how did you know who to trust, who not to trust? Did you find, it, you know, when the fame came with the show that people were coming to you just because they wanted something rather than really caring about you? Or how did you know who was safe?
Well, yes, that is true. I mean, there are so many people that come to you, some business managers who are unscrupulous and that take your money, or people that you think are going to guide you in the right direction and are doing things for their own best. And some of it, you just have to take your blows. I mean, some of it is a learning process. And it isn't just perfect out there. And you were going to run into things. They say, oh, my gosh, you know, that really hurt me. You know, how could you do that? You say, okay, I am looking at this as a warning and learning process. And so, yep, that happened. And that's not going to happen again. You know, the first time, you know, shame on you. The second time, shame on me for not recognizing that this is not the right person that I should have listened to or have dealt with. Sometimes you, with all of the learning, you can't just go into it. That's my dog.
I like your dog. Every time we talk, he gets in. He enjoys the conversation. That's a good sign.
Yes, wants to be a part of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's learning.
Mm.
And that's what Coco says about it.
Coco says amen.
Yes.
Well, your book has a lot of wonderful anecdotes about the different stars you've worked with, working on the show. I guess one of the first larger-than-life experiences was the Ten Commandments. And you're this adorable little girl. And if I remember, were you bumped up from an extra to getting something more in that movie? But you were just a kid then. I don't know. I can't remember. Maybe 10 years old or something like that.
Yes, even younger. And I was just hired as an extra. It was one of the first things that I had done professionally among the hordes of all the slaves leaving in the Exodus. And I had just been put on this wagon and to be led out through the Red Sea. And I had a little lamb on my lap. And all of a sudden, I hear this great big voice boom out, "Don't let that little girl's face get in the camera." And I said, "Oh, dear, what did I do?" And so the associate producer, the assistant director, came up and put a blanket over me. He said, "Okay, you'll be fine." And because I was wondering, I said, "Is that God? Is that who spoke?" It was far above me. But it turned out it wasn't God. It was Cecil B. DeMille, who came down on his heavenly crane, and I talked with him, and he wrote scenes into the movie for me, and I stayed
wonderful.
On the movie for 2 months.
Wow, and so the God of that set basically did something that doesn't happen that often on a big studio movie. He wrote you into this film from being an extra.
That's right.
Wow.
And the circle kind of goes around, because my son was hired as an extra for The Princess Diaries to be filmed in San Francisco. And I was just standing on the sidelines, and someone came up to me, and actually Barry Barsamian, who is the friend of mine to this day, said, "Aren't you Kathy Garver?" And I said, "Well, yes." And so we started chatting, and he said, "Have you ever met Gary Marshall, the producer, director?" And I said, "Well, no." He introduced me to Gary. Gary said, "Oh, would you like to be in this movie?" I said, "You bet." So he wrote scenes and lines just like Cecil B. DeMille did. So it all came kind of full circle.
Mm. Well, that's wonderful. Well, you know, your divine destiny kind of unfolds even when you think you're just, showing up to watch your son, you end up in it. And this book is so many wonderful photos and stories. Surviving Sissy is now out. I like the picture on the front. That's a great photo of Sissy. How did you choose that photo, or how did that become the cover? It's a great shot.
Well, I have a very good friend who lives in Kansas City, as a matter of fact, who is a comic book creator and author and marketer. And so we talked about the cover, and he submitted like three different pictures. And he says, "Well, the first is a smiling, kind of looks like Sissy, and here's another one." He said, "I don't know, the third one kind of looks like Hollywood Confidential." I said, "I love it." I love that picture. And so we submitted it to the publisher, and they loved it too. So that's how that came about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it is interesting because it's kind of a side we don't think of. It has that serious, like you say, Hollywood Confidential. So it lets us know we might read some things that we didn't know, you know. We have a question coming in from a fan of the show here. Danny asks what your thoughts are on how some of the other cast that gave us such a warmth and such a great energy, and yet some of the troubles that they had. We lost Anissa at a young age. He references that, and some of the issues Johnny went through recovery, and Brian Keith had a rough time at the end there. These are people like the questioner asked. They gave us such a warm feeling in the show. It seems like a lot of artists that do that for us then have that other some struggle, some pathology, some battle that and he wondered what your thoughts are on that, why so many people that give us these gifts with these shows and their performances, and yet their own life has a lot of battles and that sort of thing?
Well, and it's a good question. As a matter of fact, I have another book coming out in the March of 2016 called Ex-Child Stars and Where Are They Now? And what happened to some of these child stars? And they have, you know, been adorable and given their all, and then yet when they, you know, grow up, they can't seem to make the transition, or they get into drugs or alcohol and they can't redeem themselves. Johnny got in, you know, Johnny Whitaker, the little boy on the show, did a wonderful job. And then when the show was finished, he went on to do Tom Sawyer and the TV series Sigmund and the Sea Monster. And then he went on a Mormon mission. And then he came back and was trying to start his life as a young man. But then things kind of went awry, and he got married and divorced. And his parents had not saved money for him and had really spent almost all his money. So there he was without a secure family, without money, couldn't get a job. And so he turned to drugs and alcohol. And he was in such a sad state that his family came to him and said, if you don't get off drugs, we're going to divorce you as a family. Well, that kind of kicked in, and he was able to extract himself from that world, and now he counsels others on how to get off drugs. So if you know, a child's family is using them as a personal bank, they don't save their money. If they are treated more like a commodity rather than a person, that is very deleterious to their physical and spiritual health, obviously. And you take some of the to the question also, some of these people and actors, one of the reasons they're so good is because they're emotional, they have a wonderful sensitivity. That very sensitivity can be the death of them, or the give them unhappiness if they take that sensitivity and are too affected by it and take it internally, in my estimation.
Wow, so insightful. You have such a brilliant assessment of that, and you've obviously really thought deeply about this. So the book that's just out now, we're really so thrilled it's finally out, Surviving Sissy. And this book in March 2016 about the child stars, do you have a title yet, or is that still a working title, or is that still something you're thinking about?
It's the working title is Ex-Child Stars, Where Are They Now? But it's going back and forth, your favorite ex-child stars and your favorite ex-TV child stars, because it really goes from the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s and takes the child stars that are on TV series, that start on TV series. So that title is still, you know, ruminating.
Well, you will be down here in Southern California, for those of you listening in Southern California, October 5th. And correct me if I got this wrong, but it's October 5th. You're at the Santa Monica Barnes & Nobles. My son and I love that store. October, you're at Larry Edmonds. What is it, the next day? Or you're in Hollywood at Larry Edmonds?
October 7th.
October 7th, okay, 2 days later in Hollywood. And then in Burbank, I think it's the 8th, right?
Correct, yes.
Burbank.
And they're 7 to 9 p.m., for all of them except for Larry Edmonds, which starts at 7:30.
Wow, this is wonderful.
Yeah.
What a great career you've had, doing so many things. You mentioned your friendship with John Provost. Those of us that love Lassie, I still, when I see a collie, I have this great feeling because of Lassie. And, I guess that's probably a unique kind of friendship, because when you're friends with someone like that, mentioning the child stars, you have that common ground, you have that common experience. So that's a bond right there, isn't it, with some of your friends that also went through it?
Oh, absolutely. And we have like a Facebook little group, a private group that's called the Ex-Child Star Secret Society. And we help each other out. And also Paul Peterson's a minor consideration. Although Paul has kind of given the reins over to someone else, Scott Schwartz, he's still the professor emeritus and the founder of the group, which helps child stars make that transition from cute little kid to, you know, a successful adult.
Well, what's ahead for you now? We have the we have this book, which is going to keep you busy signing. The other book coming out in March. Are there any types of roles, or I know you've done theater, you've done so many things, My Fair Lady and Midsummer Night's Dream, some of these classic theater pieces you've done. You've done a rich, full, you know, resume. Is there any parts or types of roles, or, you know, do you lean more towards wanting to do comedy or drama, or what would you like to do that you haven't done, or do you feel like you're very content in what you have done?
I like the roles that I have done, and I continue to do them. I really had fun in January creating the role of Aunt Polly in a new rendition called River Song, The Adventures of Tom Sawyer. So it was a musical stage presentation, and that was really fun singing, and we did that back in Tennessee. So we are going to travel with that musical. So I'm looking forward to doing more presentations of that. I am in a new movie called Heaven with a Gun, where and this is a little divergent from characters that I have played, because I have my rifle out and I actually shoot someone, and then I have this child, and so that will be out in 2016. It's with Paul LaMotte and Emilio Estevez. And then I've been cast in another Western. It's my time for Westerns, I think. A series
great.
Called Big Sky, where I will play Dorothea May Clemens, who is the owner of a bank. And I take on two children that my sister is killed. And so I take on two orphans. So it's kind of a reverse, I think, of from Uncle Bill to Aunt Sissy, but I'm Dorothea, Aunt Dorothea. I'm doing another movie called Executive Ranks, which I'm also producer on, and I love to be a producer. I like to put things together, so that's all going on. So there's a lot of activity.
Wow, that's wonderful. Well, we'll look forward to seeing those, and it's nice to hear the Westerns. Seems like we haven't had Westerns like they used to have, you know, so many of those great Westerns. So it's really something to look forward to see you in these shows.
Thank you. Yes, and I look forward to doing them. It's always fun to work with new people and to get a new aspect of life out there. So, yeah, me too.
Wow. So those of you listening, it's KathyGarver.com. And that's Kathy with a K. I know sometimes some of my Kathy friends use the C, so make sure you put in K-A-T-H-Y, Garver.com, and get this book. It's really an inside look at, I think that was what they call the golden age of TV, and just to get a feeling for what that world was like, as well as Kathy's adventures since then. Well, you know, we're clocking down to a minute or so here. Why don't you just, your final word, anything you'd like to say to your fans or share or, you know, go out with?
Well, it's always a delight talking with you. I love your look at the entertainment business and other things and bringing God in or a higher spirit to really keep us grounded. I think it's so very important in life. And to really have fun with every minute that you have. We don't have that many. And to seize each one of those moments and live it fully. That's what I would love for all my friends and fans to do, and I hope that God helps me to do that each day as well.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You have been such a blessing, Kathy, and thanks for being with us today, and God bless
you. Thank
you,
Rick. Thank you.
And God bless all of you for listening.